Welcome to the Business of Government Hour, a conversation about management with a government executive who is changing the way government does business. The Business of Government Hour is produced by the IBM Center for the Business of Government, which was created in 1998 to encourage discussion and research into new approaches to improving government effectiveness. You can find out more about the center by visiting us on the web at businessofgovernment.org. And now, the Business of Government Hour.
Welcome to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Michael Keegan, your host and managing editor of the Business of Government magazine. Today, the country faces challenges of unprecedented complexity, from an economy in crisis to expanding healthcare coverage. To meet these challenges and the myriad of other challenges requires transforming the way government works, while also inspiring the best and brightest to choose public service. Building, energizing, and maintaining a high-quality workforce is the key to success for any organization, and the federal government is no exception. How does the Partnership for Public Service seek to inspire a new generation to serve? What is the Partnership for Public Service doing to transform the way government works? And what are some of the key human capital and workforce challenges facing the federal government? We will explore these questions and so much more with our very special guest, Max Dyer, President and CEO of the Partnership for Public Service. Max, welcome to the show. It's great to have you today.
Thank you very much for inviting me.
Also joining our conversation from IBM is Maria Paz Barrientos. Maria, welcome.
You're welcome, Michael.
Max, before we delve into specific initiatives, perhaps you could give us an overview of the history and evolving mission of the Partnership for Public Service. What prompted its creation and how has it evolved since its inception?
Well, the partnership was founded, the idea came from a businessman named Sam Heyman, who unfortunately passed away 2 years ago. And he was a newly minted Harvard Law graduate in 1963 and did what about a third of his class did at that time, which was go into the government. That was the place that the best talent decided that they wanted to, when they wanted to pursue an interesting career, that's where they went. He met Bobby Kennedy, I think, two or three times in his first year at the Department of Justice. And it was an experience that stayed with him throughout his professional life. He stayed 5 years and took what he thought would just be a leave of absence to wind up the family business when his dad died. And instead, he wound up becoming an even more successful businessman than his father had been. But fast forwarding several decades, he learned from the then dean of the Harvard Law School that they were no longer in a world in which a third of the top students went into government, and that they were looking at 2 or 3% of their graduates going into government. And he got concerned. Sam was somebody who fought whatever battle he thought was worth fighting no matter what the cost. And as a businessman, he knew that government was essential to how his business did. It regulated and also supported business. And he knew that talent was where it was all at. So he got very interested in the question about why it was that talent was no longer going into government in the same way as it had when he graduated from law school. And he started talking to a large number of folks about what was being done to address the problem and ultimately concluded that he needed to put his oar in and start a nonprofit, and searched for a couple of years, several different executive search firms. And I, through a sort of unusual process, found him or he found me, and it was a perfect match. So then we started the organization. But that was the real genesis of the organization, a real effort to think about how do you get good talent to come into government. And I put together a business plan that really focused on both the talent side, how do you draw talent in, but then also equally important, how did you help government manage that talent effectively. And that's really the sort of cornerstones of the Partnership for Public Service.
So with an important mission like that, could you give us a sense of how it's operationally organized? What are some of the programs you have, the size of your budget, number of full-time employees?
Sure. So again, our core mission is to make the federal government more effective by focusing on people. And we really have five areas of what we call our high leverage points. And they follow from what I described earlier in terms of our origins. But first, to make sure the federal government has the right talent. Secondly, to make sure that it has the right leadership managing that talent. Third, that workforce is operating in an environment that draws from them the greatest engagement possible. Fourth, looking at the systems and primarily the performance measurement systems, organizational performance measure systems. And then finally, building external constituencies of support. And I got to provide a little bit of more detail around that. But the idea is specifically that one of the root causes of dysfunction in government today is that the leadership group that should be looking out for the long-term health of the government isn't there. They only spend 18 months to 2 years in office, and therefore they're not incented to make the investments that are needed to make the government run well over the long term. And talent often has, you know, fairly long investment horizons. Therefore, our notion is that since you don't have the natural group that should be focused on health internally, you really need to look externally so that government can be healthy. And that means having the business community not just paying attention to policy preferences of government, but focused on operational effectiveness. Same with the university world, same with other political stakeholders like Congress or the nonprofit community. So that's the sort of fifth bucket of activity. And we have programs that align with those five priorities, and I'm happy to go into some detail about those as well.
Yeah, I think we're going to do that. What's the size of your budget? How many folks work for you?
You know, we are approximately an $11 million a year nonprofit. There's core staff of about 60 people. We have probably 25 interns. We have a set of coaches that do a lot of the training and work that we do. And then we have a cadre of truly wonderful federal employees that typically have retired from government who do short-term projects with us. So it's a constellation of folks. And then beyond that, we have a lot of corporate partners, including IBM, that help us achieve what our effort is, which is to fight way above our weight class. So, you know, $11 million organization, you know, trying to impact a, you know, several trillion dollar organization. It's a daunting prospect. So we need partners.
Well, I'd like to transition to your specific role. Can you tell us what your responsibilities and what you do on a day-to-day basis as president, CEO of the partnership?
I do everything that I need to do. So it's a fairly diverse set of activities. You know, again, per our mission, I mean, we're trying to help the federal government manage talent better. I spend a decent chunk of my time focused on the internal management of the organization. Nothing I do is more important than the people I hire or the organization hires, since it's really a collective responsibility, and making sure those people are provided the support that they need. And so that's a consequential part of my time. Nonprofit management equates with raising money, frankly. So my job is to make sure we have the dollars that allow us to achieve our mission. It's challenging for all nonprofits. There's no field for giving for the kind of work that we do. There are 1,001 nonprofits that focus on all kinds of different things, but we're really alone in this space. And most of the stakeholders, particularly in philanthropy, look at government and say, they got all the resources. Why should we be helping them? Not always recognizing that, in fact, the highest leverage investment they can make is actually making sure those resources are used as well as possible. So fundraising is a big chunk of what I do. Clearly, programmatic engagement is important. We're putting out a report on SES mobility. It's an issue I care deeply about. So I spend a chunk of my time focusing on the research we do, on the various programmatic efforts that we make to make government better. I mean, so even think about today, I've had meetings about our legislative priorities around student interns to the leadership work. We've had a staff meeting. I'm going to talk to folks about our compensation structure. I've reviewed an op-ed. So it's a wide mix and range of different things that occupy my time.
So we talked before about how you got to the partnership, but can you talk a little bit about your experiences and the roles you held prior to joining the partnership?
Sure. I feel like I've been very lucky in terms of the range of jobs that I've had. I'm a big believer in mobility in terms of advantages it provides as far as the varying experiences that you can get and can draw from. So my wife calls me a fallen lawyer. I was trained as a lawyer at Stanford Law School, but before that, and probably closest in my mind to what I'm doing right now, I worked on political campaigns. And I learned more doing that, I think, about organizational behavior than anything else I've seen since, primarily because the time cycles are so fast. You can, in the ordinary course of a campaign, you can basically, even in a single cycle, you can, in a space of a year, see an organization start, develop, and then finish. And you can get it wrong a bunch of times so that you have a lot to learn from really quickly. After law school, I've clerked for judges. I've worked in two federal agencies, the Department of Justice, where I had a wonderful boss, Ann Bingaman, and also at the Department of Housing and Urban Development, where I worked for Andrew Cuomo, and also worked in the private sector at a law firm at Williams & Connolly, where I represented President Clinton during the Whitewater and impeachment trials and did a range of, you know, white-collar cases as well as just about everything else. You know, in every one of my experiences, what defined them was the quality of the talent that I got to work with. And, you know, my general philosophy is, you know, good people lead to great things. And that's been my experience, and I feel very lucky to have had a chance to work with some really great people.
So picking up on that, Max, I was wondering for you, given your experiences and the great people you've worked for, worked with, what are the characteristics of an effective leader? And who's influenced your leadership style?
I think the legal metaphor for me on this is everyone talks about the great trial lawyer, and people have different visions in their mind about what that looks like. You know, there's the sort of Clarence Darrow or, you know, something from television or film that sticks out for them. But what I saw was that the great people who I saw, great trial lawyers, they all had their own style. And what made them great was that they knew what their style was and they played to their strengths. And I see that as well with leadership. And I've seen, you know, the dominating, charismatic leader. I've seen, you know, folks that are immensely laid back. And in both instances, I've seen those folks succeed in dramatic ways. And so I don't think there is a style. I think fundamentally, you know, the qualities that you want in a great leader is someone who values talent, who invests in talent, and is really focused on the organizational objective. I mean, for me personally, the most satisfying achievement running an organization is actually having things happen that are great that I had nothing to do with. And the sense of leverage that you have, the ability to support and unleash other people, that to me is really powerful. And especially in the way the world is working today, even more important. But I think you get all kinds of styles. All of them can work if they're right for the people who are doing them. You know, you have certain qualities that you need, people who can listen, who can learn. Learning to me is a huge aspect of it so that they can grow. And they have to, again, focus on and respect talent.
How does the Partnership for Public Service seek to inspire a new generation to serve? We will ask Max Dyer, President and CEO of the Partnership, to share with us when our conversation continues on the Business of Government Hour.